He did a full 360, didn't hit anyone or the wall. This is like start of lap one. It was just an absolute amazing ability from Max to be able to control that car and then keep going forward. That Red Bull, he was on a charge.
Maybe this is why I'm so tired. I think I'm a little bit depressed after that Ferrari results. I'm just like, what? He said at one point he looked up at the screen and there was 20 laps left and he was like, oh my God, I just want this to be over. Please let this be over. But he kept going. That race will massively stand to him.
Welcome back to Away We Go podcast. Hello, hello, and welcome back to Away We Go podcast, a Formula One podcast that goes beyond the track limits to talk about travel and lifestyle surrounding the sport. I'm your host, Diane Bortoletto, and today I'm in Margaret River. And joining me again this week is Kira Gillen from Formula Live Polls. Welcome back to the show, Kira.
Thank you for having me back. Good to be here. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Very well. And I'm not too tired because I watched the Miami Grand Prix first thing this morning. I did not get up in the middle of the night and watch it live. As much as I wanted to, I knew it would just wreck me for the week. So yes, we've just had the Miami Grand Prix, which takes place at the International Autodrome, the Hard Rock Stadium in Miami. It's 5.412 kilometer, 57 laps around the circuit, and this is the fifth year it's been held in Miami. There's 12 left-hand corners, 7 right-hand corners, some tricky chicanes, and a layout that demands precision through the technical sector and bravery through the fast sectors. And walls are really close by because it is a semi-permanent race circuit, but it is a street circuit essentially. And it was a sprint weekend, so Miami, wow. Gosh, we've had no racing for 5 weeks and then the drivers come back. Last week you told us that they had an extended free practice of 90 minutes. Being a sprint weekend as well, they only get one practice. So 90-minute free practice and then we'll bang straight into sprint quali, the sprint quali and the race. So, oh God, sum it up for us. Kira, what are your thoughts?
Oh God, it was action-packed. It definitely was. It didn't go the way I thought it would go. I mean, okay, it didn't go the way my little heart wanted it to go. It didn't even go the way my brain thought it would go. But really logically, it actually went the way I should have thought it would go. Like Kimi winning, it should have thought that. I thought Russell would win. But yeah, Russell had a mare of a weekend. But yeah, lots to talk about, lots to discuss.
Just quickly running through the results for the race itself. So yes, Kimi Antonelli, first driver in Formula One history to have 3 pole positions consecutively and converting those 3 pole positions into 3 race wins consecutively. Only racer in the world to have done that. So Kimi has won Miami. That was fantastic to see in the Mercedes, of course. Lando Norris finished second in McLaren. Oscar Piastri finished third, his teammate in McLaren. George Russell finished fourth. Max Verstappen in Red Bull in fifth. Lewis Hamilton in sixth. Franco Colapinto in the Alpine in his best result of his career, finished in seventh. Charles Leclerc in eighth. Carlos Sainz in ninth. And Alex Albon in the other Williams in tenth. So double points for Williams. Fantastic to see them improve after their shocking first 3 races. They just did really nothing, did they?
It was a good race for them. Like, you know, they got themselves up into the points and they kept themselves there. So yeah, I think it was. I mean, they, as you said, they've had a shocking start to the season and you can see Carlos is getting more and more frustrated. And I'm sure it's frustrating for Albon as well because he saw the potential of last year and he wasn't capitalizing on it. So it was great. And it was really great for them to finish in the points. As someone said, like this time around, Carlos has gotten points already this year, but he got it because other people had like crashed or something. I can't remember exact details. Whereas this time it was actually on merit. Like he got there and kept himself there. So it was great. Really great for Williams. Positive step forward.
Definitely a positive step forward for Williams. And one I really enjoyed seeing, although they didn't get a lot of airtime. We didn't really see a lot of them on the broadcast.
Not actually true, because there was a few moments. There was the moment where Max was charging through the field and he was having a few encounters with Albon. But no, I mean, there was focus on certain people, Max being one of them, which we'll talk about. But yeah, there was a couple of other people, a lot of other people who didn't even get much airtime.
Yeah, and Max got a lot of focus because he qualified in second position, so front row of the grid. And then in lap one, he, without contact, I think he, it looked like that Charles Leclerc was very close to him, but I don't think he actually made contact, but he span. He did a full 360, didn't hit anyone or the wall. This is like start of lap one. It was just an absolute amazing ability from Max to be able to control that car and then keep going forward. Like he dropped back to something like eighth position or something after that, and then worked his way up through the field, and he was charging, wasn't he? He was on, he was that Red Bull, he was on a charge.
He was on such an impressive charge. Like, so we do a pulse pick, you know, who's your favorite driver? And I was turning to Simone and I was like, oh my God, Max is going to get it this week again because he gets it a lot. But it was so deserved. It was so deserved. He was amazing. Like, yeah. I do think they probably had a little bit too early of a strategy call for him, you know, because those hards, like, ultimately just lost out in the end. But yeah, if they hadn't, if they had called that a little bit earlier, he definitely would have been on the podium. If not winning that race, but definitely on the podium. Like, it was so impressive. He was the only one, if you look at it, like, he was the only one who was making distance, making yards, as they say, and charging through that field. Like, even the guys who were supposed to be, like, fast, like Ferrari. I have so many issues with Ferrari. Maybe this is why I'm so tired. I think I'm a little bit depressed after that Ferrari results. I'm just like, what? But we'll come to that. But Verstappen was amazing. Okay, we'll come to Kimi, but he should have been up there on the podium.
Yeah, he did. He did have a really impressive drive. And that Red Bull, like, he's much happier in the car after the upgrades, which is fantastic. Well, it is fantastic, but it just means that, my God, Max, one of the best drivers that the sport has ever seen, is in a car that is now performing. So, oh my God, that's really going to shake things up. And I think any Mercedes driver that had their hopes on perhaps, you know, a championship is going to, they need to watch out.
I think so too. Like, yeah, I think if he hadn't had a little spin, he was contending. And I think he was contending more than Norris was, to be honest, because I think he actually showed he had power and he had speed. Yeah, so it'd be really interesting to see what happens going forward. Like, I don't think Mercedes, the slam dunk they think they have, not anymore. I mean, George has really proven that. To what's going on with George. Kimi, like, if you look at Kimi, when Kimi had finished that race, he was, I think he poured water over himself, but he was exhausted.
Oh, yeah.
He was sweating buckets and he was exhausted.
I've got to say, head of the FIA, MBS, Mohammed bin Salman, the head of the FIA, poured water over Kimi Antonelli's head when Kimi, you know, when they put their watch on and stuff before they do the post-race interview, straight out after they get out of the car. I was like, dude, leave the kid alone, firstly. Like, it's just, you're not his mate. Like, I was a bit gobsmacked at that. But you're right. Even just watching Kimi climb out of the car and he was standing on the nose of the car about to stand up and do his, you know, Usain Bolt. His legs were shaking. Like, I rewound it and they were shaking. It took a lot out of him. And of course it did. I mean, he had Lando Norris on his tail, like within, like between 1 and 2 seconds towards the end there. And he was really fighting. I mean, George Russell did say in the lead up to the race, like after the sprint, that Miami's never gelled with him. He doesn't like circuits that have little grip or low grip circuits. Whereas Kimi, you know, maybe he's just got that young bravado. I don't know. But when the car slides, because it's a lower grip, Kimi's just like a bit like a rally driver. Like, he just goes with it it doesn't seem to affect him, whereas it does affect George. So maybe because George has had more accidents. I don't know. He's got a fear factor, perhaps. I don't really know why, but that's what George has said. It really showed. Like, George should not have finished fourth, really. He only finished fourth because Charles Leclerc had a problem with the Ferrari, which, yeah, we need to talk about Ferrari. My God. Anyway, but I interrupted you. I'm so sorry. And you were saying?
Well, I was saying the same thing you were saying. I was saying about how Kimi, yeah, when he was doing his interview, he could barely, like, he looked exhausted. And then he got kind of confused because he was meant to kind of step back and so they could interview Norris. And he kind of stepped forward. And then when he stepped back, he actually had to crouch down. So he was completely spent. And then I saw a clip on his Instagram where he was just like, completely flushed and just exhausted. And he was being very, and that's what I like about King is he's, because he's young, he's very open, he's very honest. And he was just like, oh my God, he said at one point he looked up at the screen and there was 20 laps left. And he was like, he didn't say this, but I would think he was internally crying because he did say this. He was like, oh my God, I just want this to be over. Please let this be over. And I just felt that. And he was like, it was so hot in the car. Like my little immature brain would have been like, oh, I'm just going to let Norris take the lead and just so I can just calm down and I can, you know, but he kept going. And as you said, he had Norris on him for a lot of it, you know, so yeah, so it's impressive, but that'll really stand to him. And I understand why Toto Wolff was like, it was his best win because he really had to work hard for it. And I think, yeah, as he grows, as he builds his stamina, builds his experience, that race will massively stand to him.
Yeah, definitely. He got lucky in, was it Japan? One of the other race wins with a safety car that worked in his favour. Today, he didn't really have any of that luck, I suppose. He put it on pole for qualifying and that was just all just pure speed. I love watching him drive. I like his driving style, just like I like Oscar's driving style. Like he's just a fearless but fair driver. And I think Oscar had a brilliant race. He started in, you know, qualified seventh, which is a bit rubbish really, but finished on the podium. Well, actually he passed Charles before Charles had the issue. So yeah, he got ahead of him and then finished third on the podium. And then Lando Norris, the reigning world champion, finished second in the race after qualifying in third. Charles was fourth and then did the Ferrari slingshot start. So it's good to see that with the new regulations that are coming and the upgrades that all the teams have come in, that Ferrari haven't lost that slingshot start, because that is just so good to watch. I love it.
Yeah, but it's getting a little depressing because it's like, yeah, amazing. He maneuvered amazingly in that opening lap. Like he avoided Max. There was the stuff that he did, you know, that I thought was really impressive. And he got the lead. So exciting. But he can't keep the lead. And, you know, somebody told me last night, the Ferrari, I knew they had brought upgrades, but they apparently brought 11 upgrades. Like, Where were they? What upgrades? What? Once I start, if we're ready to talk about Ferrari, like I'm just, like if you look at it, okay, Lando said after he qualified third for the feature race, he said he was being interviewed and they were like, well, why, you know, you'd won the feature at a sprint race, what happened? And he said, well, I think people just made mistakes. I don't think we're actually as good as where we think we are. I think people made mistakes and that's the reason why we were able to win the race, blah, 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 or whatever. I don't think it's fully true. I do think his McLaren was faster than I would like to give a credit for this weekend. But at the end of the day, also, Ferrari brought these massive upgrades. And where were they? Okay, the issue meant that he finished, like, there's stuff that happened and maybe he would have finished fourth and it would be fine. But like sixth and seventh, fourth and seventh, sixth and eighth, That's the Ferrari of like last year. That's the Ferrari, you know what I mean? There's nothing, doesn't seem like anything has changed. They still have this slingshot opener, but that's it. They couldn't keep it. They couldn't keep the speed. And McLaren overtook them.
And the strategy call.
Oh.
And even Charles coming on the radio saying, if you're going to make a decision, you need to consult me, because he doesn't trust them to make the right call of when to pit. Like he was furious. There was not much about Lewis on team radio on the broadcast, and you know, because I was not watching it live. I didn't have the benefit of the Formula Live Pulse app. Yeah, with all the live telemetry, but it was just disappointing. In the end, on the very last lap, Charles, something happened. He hit the throttle too hard. I don't know. Something happened. He spun. He went around. He clipped a wall. He limped over the line after clipping the wall. And, you know, George overtook him and Max overtook him. And then, you know, then what happened? They got a penalty.
Yeah, he got a 20-second penalty. He got I think it was a drive-through penalty or a stop-and-go penalty or something like that, and they converted it to 20 seconds. They brought him up on several charges, two of which were driving recklessly with a car that was, you know, was dangerous or whatever, and leaving the track to gain an advantage.
Oh, come on.
I'm sorry. I have such an issue with this penalty. I have such an issue with it.
Yeah, me too.
Like, first of all, it was the last lap. He didn't gain any advantage. He slowed to 14 seconds a lap. Like, he was so slow that two other cars that he had overtaken many laps previously overtook him. So he got no advantage. And then they give him this 20-second penalty. So then, like, you know, only for the fact that Lewis was going so slow that there was such a gap. But it just seems so unfair. And then this is my ignorant, non-technical brain, but I also think that this is unfair, is that the Gasly-Lawson incident. So Lawson had a technical issue. Mm. And whatever happened with his car, Gasly flipped. Gasly, if it wasn't for the halo, Gasly was going to be killed. You know, it's a very serious accident.
Yeah. He flipped right over, didn't he? And then landed sort of wedged up against the barrier. It was,
Yeah.
That could have been all very serious.
Completely.
Thankfully, I can't believe he walked away from that one. Yeah.
That shows how safe the cars are, which is amazing, you know?
Yeah.
But Lawson didn't get any penalty, got nothing. They said there's nothing, you know, they recognized that it was a technical issue or it was the fault of the car or whatever. And I can understand that, and I don't disagree with that, you know what I mean? But then I look at Charles. There was no one. He didn't harm anybody. Nothing happened. And then Charles gets a 20-second penalty. How is that fair? It just doesn't compute.
No, and I haven't heard what happened to Max, but they were going to look into Max. Yeah. He exited the pit and crossed the line too early. And then the steward said that they were going to look into that after the race. And this happened, like, when the safety car came out. I think that was lap 12 or something. It was, don't quote me on that, but it was early in the race. Why wait till after the race? If they were going to give him a penalty, like 5 seconds or whatever, he could have served that and then worked his way up through the pack, which we know Max is famous for doing. I don't know what his penalty was. Have you heard?
Yeah, he got 5 seconds penalty, but it didn't impact anything because Charles had been knocked. Charles got the 20-second penalty. So he finished fifth still.
Yeah.
But apparently I read what happened was they needed more angles. I assume they needed the footage from inside the car, which they didn't get till after the race. That's why they needed to wait, because they didn't have enough footage to tell them if he had, you know, broken a rule or whatever. So that's why. But yeah, it is very frustrating when they wait till after the race.
Exactly. I mean, in this day and age where there's cameras literally everywhere, come on. Do better, FIA. Come on. This is ridiculous. And it's just lucky that in this case, in this race, that 5 second penalty didn't impact anything, like you said, with Max's result. But it could have. You know, it could have been the difference between 100%. Points. It could have been the difference between a podium. They need to sort that out. That's not good enough.
I mean, obviously it's easy for us to sit here and say this, but I do agree.
Totally. Armchair critics, you know, we're armchair commentators that just come up with all these pie-in-the-sky theories of how everything should be perfect and done the way that we think.
No, but it is crazy, though, that I was going to sleep at around 11 or 12, and it only came out when I was going to bed. And so the race had started at 7 p.m. our time in Berlin. And then, like, you know, this is 5 hours later minimum that they came out with this result, with this penalty. You know what I mean? It's just kind of crazy that takes that long, you know. Yeah. But in this case, Max was fine. It didn't impact him, but, like, it could have.
Yeah, it could have. And let's hope that this is a lesson learned and that, you know, the FIA do put measures in place so this is not repeated, you know, because waiting 5 hours after a race for like a factual penalty like that, it's not like, oh, is it a racing incident or is it not a racing incident or is it a technical issue or was someone at fault? No, there's a line. They crossed it or they didn't cross it. It's black, it's white. It's, you shouldn't have to wait 5 hours for a result, in my opinion.
Yeah.
In my expert opinion.
I agree.
I know everything, right? No, I don't. And the sprint race, there's probably more to talk about. In the feature race itself, we had a crazy lap one and first few laps and then a crazy final lap. It was a pretty good race. Like, there were only a few laps where I was starting to drift off and picked up my phone and started scrolling. But generally, I thought it was quite action-packed. And the new regulations, I mean, did you really notice anything different?
I thought the overtaking was, again, enjoyable. I thought it was better this time around in the sense that before you would overtake somebody in the earlier races of this season and then you wouldn't be able to keep it. They would take it back fairly quickly. Whereas I felt this time around, I mean, aside from kind of Charles, oh, maybe I'm wrong, but I thought the overtaking was better this time. I thought that they kind of seemed to stick more this time when people did overtake someone, that they were able to keep it. There was one or two where, okay, they came back. Like, I think even Piastri was saying that he overtook Charles at one point and then Charles came back and that was it. I don't think Piastri's McLaren was stronger than the Ferrari this week, to be honest. I think the way it should have ended would have been the way it actually was, which was, you know, Kimi, Norris. It should have been Leclerc, then Piastri, because I do think that that's where the speed was. Well, actually, Max should have been up there somewhere as well, actually, in fairness to him. In fairness, Max should have been up there. I suppose maybe, because Piastri is an interesting one. Sometimes it's like he has to settle into the race. And then once he's settled in, he seems to gather himself and get his speed back. You know,
there was a big gap between Piastri, who finished in third, and Norris, who finished in second. But I agree. I feel like Oscar, I mean, let's remember, this is his second race of the season in this new era of cars. Everyone else has had two extra races to him. But yeah, he does seem to need to sort of settle in. And then when he's on a charge, like Max, it's just on the mission and nothing will stop him. That's how it feels watching him drive, which for me makes him such an exciting driver to watch, because he's just like, oh, here comes Oscar. And you just watch the times. He's like, he's taking 0.4 off this lap, 0.5 off the next lap, another 0.3, another 0.4. And you're just watching the time go down with each lap. I find it very exciting to watch. And I'm totally biased and I'm owning it. So that's, you know, before anyone comes at me.
No, I'm biased as well. I love watching Piastri. At one point it was between Charles and Piastri for the third place. And I was like, no, I love them both.
I know. I was praying that something happened to Lando's car so we could have Kimi, Oscar, and Charles on the podium. Yeah. But, you know, it wasn't to be.
I know. Me too. Like, and I find it hard to watch. I mean, I feel like I'm unfair about Norris. He's fine, whatever. But I find it hard to see Norris doing better than Piastri. I'm like, come on. And then I start getting, you know, these little theories in my head. I do question McLaren, though. I don't feel like they have separate strategies for both drivers. I feel like if you qualify ahead, they pit you first, and then that's it. I feel like that's their only strategy when it comes to these drivers. I was looking at them and I was like, they left Oscar out. Now, it ended up working out okay for him, but they left Oscar out on tyres that probably weren't in great shape. And he wasn't making headway through that pack, obviously, once Norris and Antonelli pitted. But he wasn't, it wasn't like, oh my God, Oscar's in the lead now, he's just going to run away with this. He wasn't doing great. And they leave him out there. And I'm just like, it just feels like there's no actual plan. And I know that's not true, but it's like they're like, okay, who's the driver in the lead? Let's have a plan for them. And then the other one will just...
The sprint race, yeah. So, I mean, this came out of left field. Lando Norris wasn't even on my radar to get a podium this weekend, let alone win a sprint and come second in the feature race. Lando, he qualified on pole for the sprint as well. So he just dominated, which, you know, great if you're a Lando fan, less great if you're not a Lando fan. So Lando, yeah, took first place in the sprint. Oscar Piastri finished the sprint in second, which was fantastic to see. Of course, bias again, being Australian. And Charles Leclerc on the podium, fantastic to see Ferrari on the podium, even in third place and even for a sprint race. But yeah, great. And George, Mr. Fourth, finished fourth again. Max in fifth. Kimi Antonelli finished sixth. He didn't have a great sprint race. And then Lewis finished in seventh. Pierre Gasly in eighth. Isaac Hadjar in Red Bull Racing in ninth. And Franco Colapinto in the top 10. I mean, obviously only the top eight get points in the sprint. But yeah, Franco finishing in the top 10 in the sprint and finishing, well, it would have been eighth, but it was seventh because of Charles Leclerc's 20-second penalty. He finished seventh. I mean, in an Alpine. And, you know, Pierre Gasly obviously crashed out, so we don't know how he would have gone. But yeah, that Alpine's made strides this season.
Yeah, I think massively. I think they're close to being the best of the rest. You know what I mean? They've done wonders. I don't know what they've done, but they've done something. I think they've, every race this season, one of their drivers has finished in the points and like around the seventh mark. You know, So it's great. It's really great for them, you know. I'm not a massive Colapinto fan. I don't know what it is. there's something I can't put my finger on. He always seems to be at the cause of something.
I can put my finger on it. Yeah, absolutely, I can. But, you know, if I say what I really mm-hmm. feel, I'm probably going to be getting death threats from his fans, which is the reason why I call yeah. a Pinto. Like, look, I'm all for being biased and being passionate and following your driver and, you know, but when the fans are sending death threats to other drivers, and I'm talking about Jack Doohan in this case, you know, that is not cool. To the point where twice now, Alpine and Formula One, well, certainly Alpine, have had to come out and call for calm amongst fans. I mean, really? Do people need to be reminded? Like, just be a decent human. It's not that hard. Follow with passion, but don't be a, just be a decent human. No need for any violence or violent threats.
100%. That's my
issue with him mostly. And that I just feel like, I've said this before, the whole Jack Doohan thing felt very unfair, and it felt like it was all about money and not about, you know, anything else. It was like they signed Jack Doohan and then Franco comes along and everything just changed, you know, cha-ching again.
Well, yeah. in defense of Carlo Pinto, and I can't believe I'm about to say this.
All right.
But is it actually, I mean, he's not there inciting his fans. Like, he's not there. You know, but the fans are something separate. Like, don't get me wrong, I don't like the fans' behavior either at all. And there's no excuse for it. And I completely agree. And I would hope that he's out there saying, hey, guys, you need to calm down. But
totally.
They're not, but it's not exactly his fault, right? And the Jack Doohan thing, I think it's more that I don't like when you see talent being forgone for money. And I do think that's the case with Carlo Pinto. Don't get me wrong, Carlo Pinto is an okay driver. You know, he's impressed in certain cases. Okay, he got himself in the points this weekend for play.
Yeah.
But I do think money is the reason what's keeping him and Alpine, especially with the ruthlessness of the person that we both don't like, Briatore. Like, I don't see Briatore sitting there going, oh, I really like you, you know. I think it's, as you say, cha-ching, cha-ching, cha-ching. At the end of the day, Formula One is a business, blah, blah, blah. So, unfortunately, people like Jack Doohan get, I was going to use a rude expression, but I'm trying to think of something that's not.
Shafted.
Get shafted, you know. And Carlo Pinto's capitalising on that because, you know, there's a young Irish racer now in Alpine's academy, Alex Dunn. And he's interesting, you know, he's had a few mishaps that kind of make you kind of question his temperament for Formula One, et cetera. But he's being called like a talent, et cetera, you know. But we were talking about it, myself and Simone, and we were like, at the end of the day, unless he can bring a lot of money, there's no way he's going to replace Carlo Pinto. You know what I mean? Like, that kid is bringing a huge amount of money. And I'm pretty sure, I could be wrong, but the whole yellow and all of this, that sponsor that they had, that's an Argentinian sponsor that they had this weekend.
I didn't realize that was an Argentine sponsor. And you do make a really good point about the Argentine fans or Carlo Pinto's fans being separate from Carlo Pinto. Like, he's not out there telling them to go and, you know, send death threats to other drivers and cause riots and whatnot. But that fan base is connected to him. That's why, I suppose, it just taints him as a personality to follow, I suppose. To me, if I bring it back to Aussie rules football, which is only played in Australia and a very parochial game, there's certain teams I don't like because I don't like their fans. Not because their team is awful or they've got players that I don't rate. It's because their fans are so vocal and one-eyed and rude. And so it's the same with Carlo Pinto in my mind. That's how I liken that. But you did make a really good point, and I'm glad you pointed that out, because I'm not having a go at Franco Carlo Pinto per se. But there is a connection there. But speaking of temperament, let's talk about Isaac Hadjar. Yeah. So, wow. So what happened? Can you talk us through what happened?
I was going to say he clipped the curb. He didn't. He went full over the curb, and I think he broke his suspension. So it was with the S's, and so obviously very tight, and he wasn't able to turn right, I think, and he just went straight into the wall after he'd gone over the curb. Yeah, and he was just in bits. His car was in bits, obviously, as in sorry, that's an expression to say when something's broken. Not it was in literal bits, it was just broken. He couldn't do anything with it, is what I mean.
His car was in the wall and not going anywhere. A retirement. And his reaction, I mean, like, okay, you thump the steering wheel, you're upset, you're annoyed, it's a mistake that you made, you know, and you're like, damn. But gosh, he went on and on and on. It was just like bang, 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 bang on the steering wheel and stop. And then he was hitting his helmet. And then he honestly, I was like, oh. And Martin Brundle, one of the Sky commentators, did say this is how he gets it out of his system. He's French Algerian. He's an expressive personality. So this is how he gets it out. But wowzers, I wouldn't want to be in his orbit when he makes a mistake about anything. Like, it's just, wow, extreme.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, I had the same reaction as you did. I was like, dude, calm down. I know you're upset, but calm down. It's okay. I was like, whoa. Yeah. And in a way, like, hearing that is probably good then, because then it's like, okay, well, hopefully he'll have taken that emotion out and then he'll be calmer when he goes back to the paddock or whatever. I was just like, wow, that's an insane reaction for something that happened. He obviously made a mistake and he's very upset because he knew that he's done something wrong and he had potential with this car. If that car, I mean, he actually started from the pit lane, actually. I was going to say he didn't qualify well,
right. But
he also got a penalty, right? And so he started from the pit lane. So he had a terrible start to the race in general anyway. But if his car was anything like Max's, he would have been moving through that pack. So yeah, I get it. But yeah, it was a very emotional, very intense reaction.
No, but the funny thing is that, like, how much that the broadcast camera stayed on him and continued to show that reaction. They could have, like, panned off. They could have shown other parts of the race. Okay, a virtual safety car came out, and then a safety car. I guess there wasn't a lot of other action. But rather than jump to a replay or whatever, they just kept showing him. And even when he got out of the car, he was really still angry. And, yeah, interesting. If I was to play paddle, which is what they're all into at the moment, or pickleball or whatever it's called, I would not want to be anywhere near him if he made a mistake. Just like, no.
If he's like that when he makes a mistake, what's he like when you make a mistake? Like, whoa.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe he's more forgiving. Maybe because I feel like he puts a lot of pressure on himself. Like some drivers, some sports people, elite athletes, and they just do that. They put all the pressure on themselves and they're their own harshest critic. Charles Leclerc's another prime example. You know, the famous quote, I am stupid, I am stupid, when he has made a mistake in the past. So I feel like that's how Hadjar just is. So he was one retirement. That was lap four. Pierre Gasly, we talked about him and his somersault after being kind of rear-ended by Liam Lawson, who had an issue, and he also DNF'd a couple of laps later. Nico Hülkenberg as well, DNF, and his car caught on fire. That was a bit scary to watch, actually, during the sprint qualifying. And then he didn't start the sprint because his car was damaged. Yeah, there were flames like coming out of the back.
Both Audis caught fire.
Yeah, you're right.
Same
with Gabriel Bortoleto. So his Audi caught on fire as well. Gabby Bortoleto finished in 12th. Ollie Bearman finished in 11th in the race, in the Haas, managed to have a car and finish the race, whereas Nico Hülkenberg did not. Gosh, lots happened.
Predict the podium.
I am stupid.
So, predictions. Well, you didn't get your predictions in on the Away We Go prediction game, and I didn't get my predictions in on the Formula Live Pulse prediction game, which I'm so sorry about.
Likewise.
I got distracted. By the time I remembered, the next day they'd closed. So, raging. I'm raging, as you would say.
Yeah, I did something similar. I was trying to log in to it and I was doing it on my phone. I was telling me to reset my password and I was like, no, I can do it on my laptop because I know it's my password's there for the Away We Go one. And then I forgot. I got distracted. So, yeah, I was kicking myself as well. Really kicking myself.
Yeah, well, on my prediction game on the Away We Go, predict the podium, I did pick Kimi to win the race. So, yeah, that was a great prediction of mine. And that's the only one I actually got right all weekend. The others were all in the wrong order. I know I said last week I'm going to pick Lewis to win. But then when I really sat down and thought about it, I felt Kimi in my bones. So I was like, yes, I think Kimi's going to keep that momentum going. And I'm thrilled, absolutely thrilled. And thrilled that an Italian driver is leading the, like, if it can't be Oscar, an Australian driver, then let it be an Italian driver leading the charge. So I'm thrilled about that. You know, it'd be good if it was a Ferrari driver as well, Italian team, but absolutely thrilled for Kimi. Like I said, I really, really like him. He's probably my second favourite driver on the grid after Oscar. Mm-hmm. I just am so happy. So anyway, I picked him. So I am leading the leaderboard of my own game, which is sounds a bit weird, but yes, I'm on 80 points. Rev Red, she had a stonker. She absolutely predicted very well and has jumped right up to take second place on the leaderboard. And Denise sits in third. So yes, but it's still really, there's not that many points between it. And if you pick a winner, that's 25 points. You can go straight up. So yeah, get on it if you haven't played. How did you go on the Formula Live Pulse prediction?
I didn't do great, of course. Typical. So I picked Charles for, we've a few more options, but I picked Charles for FP1, which I just had a feeling because Ferrari and their upgrades. But then I stupidly picked him for the winner of the feature race. I don't know why I thought that. And I picked Oscar to win the sprint. So I was right about McLaren. I just had the wrong driver. But I did have Oscar and I had Oscar and Antonelli on my podium. So I got points for both of those. Yeah. So yeah, didn't do great. 25 points, I think.
So I just want to give a shout out to Creator of the Week. This is somebody who I've been meaning to shine a light on for a few weeks and I haven't, so I'm apologizing. So her name is Brody. She is a singer-songwriter. She's from Melbourne. She goes under the name of Magdalia, and she's written a Formula One inspired song that she released just before Melbourne. And yeah, she's emailed me a link to the song and I might play it towards the end of the show. Yes, so just a shout out to her. You know, it's great having women inspired by Formula One in all different creative ways, whether they're starting a magazine like Esme Buxton that we spoke to a few episodes ago, or writing music about Formula One. I think it's all awesome.
Yeah, 100%. I must check her out.
Yes, I'll put a link in show notes so everybody can check her out. So we've got 2 weeks off before we go to Canada, and I've got two great episodes ready to roll for you guys, some guest episodes in between. So stay tuned for that. Have you got anything else on your list?
No, I think we covered a lot there. We covered a lot. Yes. I'm looking forward to Canada, but after the depression of Ferrari, I'm happy to have a little bit of a break.
Oh, no, look, we've just had 5 weeks off. I'm not ready for a break. 2 weeks is doable. 5 weeks was a bit too long. Well, thank you very much for joining us, Kira.
Thank you for having me again.
Yeah, always a pleasure. And thank you guys for having us in your ears. You can rate and review the show. Hello, if you're watching on YouTube, please subscribe. You know, the stats show that only about less than 10% of listeners actually subscribe to the show. So please give us a little boost with the stats by subscribing. That would be much appreciated. You can follow us on all the social media platforms. Links in show notes, Away We Go podcast. I'm your host, Diane Bortoletto. Thanks for having us in your ears. Until next week and until lights out. Away We Go podcast is produced by Diane Bortoletto. You turn into someone you swore you'd never be. Gasoline on wildfire, now I can't breathe. How does it feel? Drove me out and stole the key, left me for dead at high speed. Now ash and dust is all I see, hands painted red, it's a crime scene. As strangers we never knew.
twice for the same crime. Never saw it coming with the same knife.